Live from KTOO in Juneau, I'm Jeremy Shea with this news. Companies like BP, Shell, and Exxon are launching coalitions to do something that was almost unthinkable a few years ago. They're asking Congress to impose a tax or fee on carbon emissions. Senator Lisa Murkowski is highlighting a different approach in the Senate Energy Committee. Alaska Public Media Washington correspondent Liz Ruskin says while more and more Republicans acknowledge the need to act on climate change, there's a partisan divide on what that action should be.
Good morning, everyone. The committee will come to order. We have a full slate of witnesses this morning, so I want to get started.
Murkowski chaired a hearing Thursday on how to capture carbon to keep it out of the atmosphere. Witnesses talked about diverting carbon from smokestacks and using it to create concrete, or more conventionally, pumping CO2 into an oil field to pressurize it and get more oil out. Julio Friedman worked on carbon capture, utilization, and storage in the Obama administration, hence his Twitter name, Carbon Wrangler.
It should now be clear to all that CCUS is not some untested technology or greenwashing or license to pollute. Quite the opposite. It is an overt, committed pathway to deeply and quickly reducing greenhouse gas emissions in a cost-effective way.
Murkowski likes the prospects.
It's not a carbon-constrained world, but rather a world of carbon management.
This was one of a series of climate hearings Murkowski has chaired this year to focus on innovation as a solution. Innovation in energy production, storage, efficiency.
In those hearings and others, our witnesses made clear to us that significant reductions in greenhouse gas emissions will be a major undertaking that will require an all-of-the-above approach.
One approach she's not embracing? Carbon taxes. Like many Republicans, she says she doesn't want to make conventional energy more expensive for consumers. But taxing carbon emissions, or carbon pricing, was the subject of a hearing in the House on Wednesday. And the partisan divide was pretty clear. Ted Halstead leads the Climate Leadership Council. Members include BP, ConocoPhillips, and Exxon. Halstead told the House Ways and Means Committee their proposal is to charge companies for emitting carbon and pay dividends to consumers.
The reason that so many American businesses are pushing for a national carbon price is because it offers a far more cost-effective solution than regulation.
But charging for carbon emissions didn't go over well on the Republican side of the room.
The key to successfully tackling climate change is American innovation.
That was Republican Congressman Kevin Brady of Texas. Another Republican said the focus on carbon pricing was all wrong.
We're having the wrong discussion, the wrong arguments.
David Schweikert of Arizona showed the committee pictures of carbon capture projects.
There should be joy in this room that the technology is here.
A Democrat on the committee dismissed that idea as happy talk. Reporting from Washington, I'm Liz Ruskin.
The Alaska Marine Highway System will likely avert a shutdown proposed by the Dunleavy administration, but operate at a reduced level this winter. That's following an agreement between lawmakers to appropriate about $46 million to the state ferry system. It's about $40 million less than the year before. Ferry spokeswoman Ora Landau says the agency will need to strike a balance between its more profitable runs and connecting outlying communities.
So the Marine Highway System is looking at the best use of funding to figure out how to provide the best possible service with funding available.
The legislature used a funding formula drafted by the Senate Finance Committee. Sitka Republican Senator Bert Stedman told reporters last month the committee's goal was to come up with a ferry budget that Governor Dunleavy wouldn't veto.
Clearly, reduced service is better than no service, by far. Some communities aren't going to see much difference in their service, and some will see. But everybody will get a little service.
Rob Arnold serves on the Malaspina Ferry and is a local leader with the Inland Boatmen's Union. He says ferry workers hope the state doesn't lose sight of its responsibility to coastal communities.
I mean, Bellingham, great. You know, you got tourists coming, you got the military, you have, you know, people coming up for the summer. That's good, but what about these other places that, you know, they need to go to the doctors, they need to get their groceries?
Which communities will be served and when hasn't been decided. The Department of Transportation will release its draft schedule this summer. The state budget won't be finalized until signed by the governor. Alaska's cash-strapped ferry system may soon pay the wages of Canadian police in order to maintain its connection to British Columbia. As Coast Alaska's Jacob Resnick reports, the arrangement is in response to demand by U.S. Customs agents for armed backup.
Passengers in vehicles boarding Alaska ferries in Prince Rupert, BC, are routinely checked by U.S. agents. They call it pre-clearance, and it's so passengers won't have to flash IDs in Ketchikan or wherever they get off the ferry. But those U.S. Customs and Border Protection agents checking passports and looking for contraband are unarmed.
Prince Rupert is part of British Columbia, Canada. It's a sovereign nation, and we do not have authority.
Jerry McGee is a spokesman for the federal agency in Anchorage. He notes hunting rifles and shotguns are legal in both countries.
Therefore, theoretically, our staff would be the only ones that are not armed.
It's been like that for decades. But policymakers in Washington apparently aren't comfortable with the status quo. In mid-March, the Alaska Marine Highway System was put on notice, either ensure that armed Canadian police are present during inspections or shut down the port in 30 days. The ferry system's general manager, John Falvey, said the feds were clear.
You got to have, you know, armed protection for our officers. So I went to work pretty quickly and determined that that was going to be very difficult to do. And the commissioner went back, requested an extension, and we got it.
That extension bought the state 6 months with an October 1st deadline. Now, Prince Rupert is not a big place. The city has about 12,000 people and no police force of its own. It relies on the Royal Canadian Mounted Police.
We have the RCMP, which is our only armed service that's available to in our city. And, you know, they're at max capacity, as I understand it right now.
Paul Venditelli heads up economic development and transportation for the city. He says losing the Alaska ferry would be a blow to Prince Rupert.
I mean, we have about 14,000 passengers that use the Alaska Marine Highway, you know, estimating probably, $2 million to the local economy. It's a very big deal for us and a service that, you know, we don't want to lose.
The state has less than 5 months to find a workaround. So far, the solution being floated is for the state of Alaska to contract RCMP officers to stand by as armed backup. Falvey said it'll come out of the Marine Highway's budget.
I'll have to pay them. I'll have to pay them for their services. Yeah, they just don't come in and do it for free.
Alaska's state ferry system is on the ropes. The state legislature is finalizing an austere budget that projects deep cuts to service. By contrast, U.S. Customs and Border Protection commands a $20 billion budget and is expanding. Will the feds pick up the check?
No, they never offered. You'd think they would have offered maybe, but no.
Alaska transportation officials plan to write up a contract this summer. Falvey said the details haven't been finalized.
I don't think it's going to be a large sum of money, to be quite honest with you. I mean, it's just we look at it as somewhat like the cost of doing business.
An agreement allowing U.S. agents to carry sidearms at Prince Rupert is in the works, but officials on both sides of the border say that's still several years away. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Jacob Resnick.
A Superior Court judge today dismissed a pebble-backed lawsuit against the Regional Seafood Development Association in Bristol Bay. It's a legal victory for the association, which was sued by six of its members last month. Judge Yvonne Lamore ruled that the Bristol Bay Regional Seafood Development Association was within its authority to fund groups opposed to the proposed pebble mine. The decision comes a week after the Dunleavy administration threw its support behind the plaintiffs. The plaintiffs are now deciding their next move. They have 30 days to file an appeal. The village of Solomon used to be a fast-growing community during the gold rush in the early 1900s. Now it's only inhabited seasonally with no year-round residents. Located about 30 miles east of Nome, the community now seeks to return to its former status as a city.
Right now, our goal is to build infrastructure so that we can move back. So we're going to be a live city again.
Diala Johnson is the environmental coordinator for the Village of Solomon and writes their grants. In order to help sustain a growing community of 150 tribal members, the village site will need more energy sources. Currently, Johnson says a diesel generator is the Village of Solomon's only option, which powers the community's bed and breakfast. This village also doubles as a community center for the tribal members who utilize the facility during the summer. According to Johnson, long-term goal is to become 100% dependent on renewable energy sources.
How do you have just a casual fling, a one-night thing in a place so romantic?
This is Whitehorse-based songwriter Sarah Hamilton with her song, Kauai. The multi-instrumentalist brought her guitar to KTOO to record this red carpet concert during the Alaska Folk Festival.
How do you have just a one-night stand?
You can watch this video and other red carpet concerts, including the Juno hip-hop duo Radiophonic Jazz, at ktoo.org. And finally, cruise ship travelers have been visiting North Pole to show their Christmas spirit and declare their love at the Santa Claus house. Fairbanks Daily News Minor reported Thursday that Princess Cruises has steered its Santa Cruise to North Pole for the past 3 years. A bus operated by the cruise line arrived at the house on Wednesday. Couples clad in red, white, and green renewed wedding vows in the Santa Claus house with the help of an ordained minister. That's it for the KTOO News Update for Friday, May 17th, 2019. I'm Jeremy Shea.